You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
Chang in San Francisco, and this is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up in the next hour, early results from third party shows Amazon's latest Prime Day not much better than any other day. Amazon saying not so fast. Our conversation with a Prime executive is coming up. Plus, Grayscale claps back at the SEC after rejecting a Bitcoin ETF. I'll speak with CEO Michael Sonnenschein about their legal challenge and ongoing friction between Gary Gensler and the crypto community. Plus, Andrew Yang joins us to talk about the state of tech entrepreneurship in a downturn, plus his outlook for president in 2024. Meantime, this week's Bloomberg Businessweek cover story focuses on the roller coaster ride that has been the Musk Twitter deal. Kurt Wagner writes that for Twitter, there are no good outcomes, no matter what path a deal with Elon takes. Musk has publicly trashed Twitter's top management and alienated thousands of its employees, vowed to slash rules that were put in place after misinformation threatened election integrity, and wants to make Twitter the everything app, but hasn't really explained what that means. Here to discuss, Bloomberg's Kurt Wagner. So the headline, Kurt, is that Twitter faces only bad outcomes if this deal closes. Why do you say so?
Yeah, well, remember, Emily, there's two options here. One, the deal falls apart and this stock that has been sort of artificially inflated is going to crash. Employees who have spent the last 6 to 9 months, just in this total state of uncertainty are going to have to pick up and pretend like, nothing ever happened. Or if things go the way Twitter wants, then they get the guy in charge who, for the last 3 months has been saying that Twitter's been lying about its user base and it doesn't have the right business model and all these things, right? So it's just sort of like, it feels to me that there's not really a lot of good outcomes here. Now, I got a lot of fan mail after this story came today, Emily, for people who disagreed that they think, the free speech vision Elon Musk keeps talking about is going to make Twitter a much better place very shortly. But, even that, I would probably argue, is going to create a lot of other headaches for this platform very soon.
Well, and look, Musk does have millions and millions of fans, so that's certainly not, out of the question that, some folks are going to be very happy if this deal gets done. That said, you used the words very shortly there, and I'm curious, say the deal does get done before October 28th, could Elon Musk make significant changes to the platform before the midterm elections, before November 8th?
I mean, the deal is supposed to close by the 28th, right? And so to me, that means that Elon Musk would be in charge, and therefore, are they going to be able to, bring President Trump back onto Twitter within the next week. Like, possibly it is possible, but how much of an impact is that going to have? I don't really know, right? But I do think that there could be changes to some of these policies. They could say, hey, all the folks who have been looking for misinformation or hate speech or voter misinformation, stand down. Don't bother. Don't do your job. And all of a sudden, you know, we could have a very different level of content on the platform very soon.
What's the latest on negotiations between the two parties? What are they actually talking about right now?
Yeah, I mean, there has been some stuff that we have reported at Bloomberg that, you know, despite the fact that both sides want the same deal price, there have been some hangups, right? Specifically that, you know, it sounds like Elon Musk wants to reserve his right to possibly sue some of these executives once the deal closes, to go after, you know, maybe people kind of personally as a way to say, hey, you've been misleading investors and misleading me, the potential buyer, this whole time, right? Twitter, of course, doesn't want to have that in there. They're also worried about this debt contingency that Elon had to add to, you know, the negotiations. So I imagine at this point, both sides are trying to iron through those types of details, right? I mean, they claim they want the same price. I think the debt is for the most part locked up. And so you think like, okay, they're really at the end here where they're kind of going over those very minute elements of a deal.
All right. Kurt Wagner, thanks for keeping us updated as always. And check out that story in the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week. This week's Amazon Prime flash sale may not be all it's chalked up to be. Third-party researchers are saying the Prime Day sale is generating the same traffic as any regular day. Bloomberg's Ed Ludlow asked Jamil Ghani, Amazon's head of Prime, about the data. Here's how he responded.
I don't know if that's the accurate read. We've been really impressed with how many Prime members are showing up, how they're engaging with the event, and how they're shopping. They're shopping the entire store. Some of the favorite categories so far are electronics, toys, home, apparel, health and personal care, top brands like Apple, Laneige, HP, Shark, and many, many others, including items off our curated top 100 list. So we've been really, really happy with the event so far. Our members can engage through midnight tonight, so I encourage them to check it out.
What is Amazon tracking to do for this October window in dollar terms relative to July? Can you give us some granularity about the impacts of having a second window in the same calendar year?
Yeah, we have to keep in mind that Prime Day this year was the largest Prime Day we've ever had, $1.7 billion in savings for our members around the globe. And so what we're trying to do with this event is give our Prime members yet another opportunity to save. We know that our members are always looking for savings, but no more so than now, where, you know, the macroeconomic environment has everybody trying to make the dollar stretch a little bit further. And so this is an opportunity for 48 hours for our members to get an exclusive jump on their holiday shopping. It's needs and wants across the entire store. And so far, the engagement's been really strong. So it's too early to tell, but I expect that there'll be deals throughout the event. That's something that we learned in Prime Day, that our members like top brands and they like having deals throughout the entire event. You're going to continue to see that through midnight tonight.
So this window will not be as big as the July window.
It's too early to tell, but we're very excited by the early engagement. And it is the kickoff to the entire holiday season. We're going to have deals and discounts throughout the entire period. Black Friday, Cyber Monday continue to be incredibly important, but we wanted to take care of our most engaged or most important customers first. Those are our Prime members. And so this is the kickoff to the season.
That is interesting, right? The idea around the pull forward in holiday spending. Can you talk to me about how that might help clear out some inventories ahead of the holiday season?
Yeah, you know, this event is not about inventory. We built this event purpose-built on the top brands that our members we know are looking for as they go into the shopping season. And so this is an exclusive 48 hours for our Prime members to get a jump on their holiday shopping, ensure that they get those must-have giftable items, get some of the holiday rush out of the way earlier in the season. But we're going to continue the deals and discounts for all of our customers, including Prime members, going into Black Friday and Cyber Monday.
You alluded to it earlier, but what are you learning about the consumer based on what they're buying? It seems through third-party data, they might be going for the sort of cheaper end of the spectrum in terms of the items they're buying. Is there any sense that the consumer is feeling the pain of inflation?
Well, I think all of us as Americans are feeling the pinch of inflation. All of us want to stretch our dollar as far as we can. What we saw in Prime Day is that members engaged across all sales prices, from consumables and everyday essentials all the way up through the electronic devices. It's needs through wants. And that's why we built Prime Early Access Sale, to have the top brands across the entire store so that members can meet those needs and wants. We've got top brands in health and personal care, all the way to toys, to home, apparel, and electronics, which are, you know, clearly a member favorite every holiday season. And so we're seeing the same in engagement now. We expect that to continue over the next several hours through midnight tonight.
Amazon's head of Prime there, Jamil Ghani, with our own Ed Ludlow. For more on this, I want to bring in our Bloomberg reporter, Spencer Sober, who, of course, covers Amazon. So, Spencer, let's talk about a potential disparity here in what the third-party folks are saying and what Amazon is saying. Just how good has this Prime Day actually been so far?
Yeah, I think it's what we're hearing is that there's slight lift from a usual day now. We're getting some revised data from what we had earlier, a deeper look, a slight lift from a typical day, but not nearly the same amount of lift as they had in the summer Prime Day. And I'm not sure that we're that far off. I mean, if you listen carefully to what the Amazon executive says, he uses words like shop and he uses words like engagement. And so he doesn't use words like buy and he doesn't use words like spend, engagement can be just a cute way to say people are coming on the site, they're noodling around, they're looking at this, that, and the other, but they're not really buying a whole lot.
So what does this tell us about the state of the consumer, potentially more broadly, leading into the holidays? Or does it tell us something more about Amazon?
Well, I think it's a little of both, right? It's not a secret that consumers are pulling back, that they're dealing with higher food and fuel prices, things that they have to buy and have less money, to spend on things that they want to buy. And then on Amazon, we're learning, like, on these kind of things, some of the top categories are like household essentials and pantry items and things. People just kind of spend in to stock up on things they'd otherwise buy and not necessarily splurging on things like electronics and whatnot. But then in terms of Amazon, it's just they figured, hey, what the heck, we'll do another sale. And it was interesting. You said it wasn't about inventory. When it is about inventory, that's really why Amazon was able to spin this thing up so quickly, is because a lot of merchants, the inventory is already there. They have it.
Meantime, there have been some developments in unionization efforts at an Amazon warehouse in California. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, this is pretty interesting to watch. So there's a one warehouse in Moreno Valley in the Inland Empire, and that's a real stronghold for Amazon. That's probably where they've got the most concentrated number of facilities and employees. And so one of them just submitted signatures to push for a union election affiliated with this Amazon labor union, which was the one that won approval for a union in Staten Island, which Amazon is still contesting. And now there's another vote coming up next week in Albany, again affiliated with this Amazon labor union. So starting to look like this thing's spreading and Amazon's having a hard time containing it.
All right. Spencer Soper, who covers Amazon for us. Thank you. Coming up, weeks after the massive Adobe Figma deal, the other hot enterprise software startup has some news. Airtable CEO Howie Liu is with us next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kruszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Collaboration software startup Airtable just announced its biggest launch of the year at its inaugural Airtable Leaders Forum. Coming up, with a new connected apps platform that'll help companies like Netflix, LinkedIn, and iHeartMedia share data, manage workflows, track product roadmaps, and more. Co-founder and CEO Howie Liu with me now for more on this. So, you know, talk to us about the trends that you're seeing in enterprise software and why an announcement like this in your mind is important. Like, what problems does this solve?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's best to explain it in terms of where we came from and where we're going. So 10 years ago, Marc Andreessen said software is eating the world. We created Airtable really to kind of execute against that and empower the teams closest to the work in every company to be part of that disruption, to build the apps for themselves that they needed. Now we've seen this bigger problem within enterprises where it's not enough to just have individual apps, but those apps need to be connected and to allow the entire enterprise to all share a source of truth while enabling all those individual teams to still be really, really flexible and agile. So it's kind of the next frontier of Airtable, you know, combining what we've already done literally in these connected apps across an enterprise.
Airtable benefited from some of those pandemic tailwinds, the shift to hybrid work. Has that kept up? What sort of workplace trends are you seeing now?
I think a lot of what we're seeing now is that there is this huge need to rethink how work is being done, right? Especially in today's economy, it's not just about throwing more people at every problem. You can't just, you know, double your headcount in every department to get more output. You need to rethink how efficiently you work. And that's where I think our enterprise vision of connected apps is really going to come into play. And it's already showing up in how we sell Airtable, how we're seeing our customers adopt Airtable. It's really about enabling more agility and more output. You know, we talked about this customer case study during our event earlier today of Equinox actually accelerating their content production efforts by 400% with the same team and during a pandemic where they were all working from home, nonetheless, using Airtable and connected apps.
How do you see competition shaping up? There's Asana, Monday.com, others that are vying to be the project management tool of choice. What is Airtable's advantage?
Yeah, I think the whole idea behind declaring our North Star as connected apps is that we're actually elevating ourselves out of that world of project management. We actually don't really care as much about the task management, small team use cases that I think a lot of the other products are going after. And instead, we're really trying to solve this bigger problem across an entire enterprise where you need these shared sources of truth, these high-value golden data sets, as we call them. You know, for instance, Netflix having this master list of all the content titles they're producing and then wanting to manage all of their marketing, their post-production, their legal rights management, et cetera, workflows across that data set. And so it's really, you know, us going out and taking on more companies like ServiceNow or even Salesforce with their app cloud efforts. When we think about going and deploying apps across every other part of the enterprise, not just doing projects or tasks.
I think some people are still recovering from the shock of the big Adobe Figma deal, $20 billion. And I'm dying to hear your thoughts on it, given that Airtable is one of the few, you know, hot enterprise software startups that's often mentioned in the same breath as Figma. What's your take on this deal?
I think Figma is an incredible product company, has a great team. You know, they started around the same time as us. So weirdly, we've been parallel. I think we both started around 2012, both spent years building a pretty technically interesting product before launching. These were not products, Airtable nor Figma, that were built overnight as a hack project, but really a deliberate taking on of a really, really large market opportunity. I think ultimately the trend that's really benefited both of us is that for the first time on the web, when both of us started, you could build these really rich desktop-grade experiences, right? Figma could not have been built. You couldn't build that level of experience in the web, nor could you build Airtable in the web. And so I think we're both right place, right time to take on really large market opportunities and disrupting some incumbents as a result.
Is getting acquired like that something that's attractive to you? Are you on the IPO path instead?
I think that the best companies have to think about how to build an independent business, right? I mean, when you look at Figma, one of the reasons why it was so attractive as a business and why it's valued so much in this deal is because actually they could go it alone. They have the leverage. I mean, it's growing very quickly. It's an amazing business. There's a massive TAM, and it's truly a disruptive and delightful product, right? And so I think if you can go out and build a company that is truly capable of being a star in a star independent business on the IPO path, then I think that also raises your attractiveness in this case for Figma through an M&A deal. So we've always been squarely focused on just building the best product and ultimately business and company that we can. And, you know, we're not optimizing for an acquisition.
So we've seen valuations of tech startups fall across the board. You raised at an almost $12 billion valuation at the end of last year. Does that number hold up in a downturn, or is Airtable in the rare category of startups like Figma potentially where that number potentially goes up?
So the way I've always thought about it is the short-term valuation is just, it's a point in time. And what really matters for both us as team members working on this company, for shareholders who may consider investing in Airtable, is what is the long-term expected value of this business? And especially since we're private and we don't have a public liquid value right now, what do we think this company will be worth in 1 year, 2 year, 3 years? And especially as the operators within the business, what can we do to drive towards the best possible result? And so I think as we push into connected apps and this bigger and bigger possibility of solving a problem for enterprises at large, actually generating, you know, multi-million dollar contracts repeatedly, and even, you know, driving up our already best in class net dollar retention, I think we feel very good about the clear path that we can get to building a really extraordinary business that's highly differentiated, has the unit economics to support a really premium multiple. And, you know, whether there's overall multiple compression in the public markets in the near term, you know, I think the great businesses that ultimately go after really large TAMs and have durable growth potential can outgrow any of that compression because they just keep growing and growing.
All right. Interesting response there. Airtable co-founder and CEO Howie Liu. Good to have you back here on the show. Thank you for stopping by. Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco. The global sell-off in semiconductor shares continues, but one name in Japan bucking that trend are Ed Ludlow back with a look at Socio next. Ed.
Yeah, we don't often talk about Japan, but let's look at Socio next in the context of this big sell-off we've seen in global chip stocks. It had its trading debut in Japan, in Tokyo on Wednesday, jumping 15%. A lot of investor interest here, generating around 67 billion yen or $456 million of proceeds. And what's so interesting about this name, it's a maker of systems on a chip or logic processors, for want of a better description, is there's a lot of appetite right now for what it's offering in a market where we have a lot of questions about global chip demand. If we bring up the next chart, this was actually the biggest IPO in Japan so far this year on a gross proceeds generated basis. It was the fourth IPO for a chip maker out of Japan this year. So it's really interesting to see that name buck the trend. We're also getting data points out of Vanda this Wednesday that actually see retail investors taking a keen interest in the chip space, even if we see institutional money kind of sitting on the sidelines or pulling out because we have concerns about a global slowdown. And speaking about those concerns, we look at this terminal chart. Investors are really pulling back earnings expectations for the chip sector. We've had bad news from a broad range of names. We're concerned about a slowdown in demand for consumer electronics, for memory chips in particular, and the PC market. That scoop overnight from Bloomberg that Intel, according to sources, is going to cut thousands of jobs because of the PC slowdown. Well, this is the result, the market pulling back its expectations. But one name in Japan, Socio Next, as we said, Em, bucking that trend.
All right, Ed, thank you. A name we don't normally hear about. Appreciate it. I want to zoom out now of chip stocks and get back to the broader macro environment with rising inflation and a falling market, the state of valuations and venture capital and startup innovation all top of mind at the Greenwich Economic Forum that is underway right now. Our next guest, entrepreneur and former presidential candidate Andrew Yang, joins us from there now. So Andrew, obviously so much talk about what is going to happen with this economy. Are we or are we not going into a recession? Given your Venture for America background, I'm curious what your outlook is if you are an entrepreneur trying to get started in a downturn.
Well, if you look at the track record of high growth companies, Emily, and you know this full well, most of the really meaningful companies get started in a downturn like this one for a host of reasons. The fact is that an enterprise that succeeds in this time is going to be poised to really mushroom as soon as the climate starts turning more positive. So I do think that this is going to be a very, very tough time, but guaranteed we're going to see tons of meaningful firms come out of this period.
What's your sense of how this tough time will compare to, let's say, the financial crisis or even the dot-com bust? Is there something different about it?
No, I think we have a ways to go on the downslope myself. I mean, we can all see very clearly that the Fed's going to be jacking up interest rates for the foreseeable. And there are a lot of valuations that don't make as much sense in that environment. So we're going to all find out together how this compares to some of the tough times of the past. But I certainly think that folks should try and keep some powder dry, you know, make sure that you have enough cash to make it through for a little bit longer than you might hope.
San Francisco is one city that's having a tough time recovering from the pandemic, and now there's this downturn. You've got companies going remote. You've got companies moving to Austin or Miami. Do you think this the center of innovation, the fundamental center of gravity, is actually going to shift and become more distributed, or is it too early to say that?
No, you and I both have friends who have decamped to Austin or Miami. And I'm a big believer that innovation and growth will follow wherever the talent goes. So if you have people who have permanently settled in Austin, I think you're going to see a permanent shift, truly. Now, the Bay Area, in my view, still has the highest concentration of tech talent. So it's still going to be the envy of many other cities. But I do think we're in a permanently different time where talent is going to be more distributed. And because of that, you're going to see capital be more distributed and growth companies come out of places where they might not have otherwise.
Congress has been trying to rein in big tech, and big tech has retaliated by spending a ton of money to kill one of the most aggressive oversight bills in years. What's your thought on whether that bill potentially needs to be revived and whether strong regulation is really needed?
Oh, it's interesting, Emily. The political climate has changed such that tech now is a bit of a punching bag for both parties. And I'm of the belief that there have been some excesses that regulation would be appropriate for. And a lot is going to hinge upon what the political climate is after these midterms. Right now, the Senate is a toss-up by most accounts. Republicans are slightly favored in the House. And I think that might change the prospects of some of the bills that we're talking about.
You've been very vocal about data collection. You launched the Data Dividend products to help Americans take control of your data. How are you feeling about how tech companies are handling that data right now, and especially going into an election?
You know, it's fascinating, Emily. As you know, I championed the CPRA and data privacy regulations in California, where you are. And because California has now set a higher bar, national legislation is increasingly likely and on the table, in part because tech companies wanted to supplant and replace the rules in California. Our data is being used not to our benefit. It's a $200 billion plus a year industry. It's eroding our democracy, our kids' mental health. I'm someone who thinks that we should own our data and not only have it used more to our benefit, but if there is going to be market value gain, we should join in that benefit. So that's where I'd like the national approach to go. Europe has new rules that are coming online in 2024, which is right around the corner, and I think that's going to increase pressure on the states to have a more modernized approach.
You've been branching out into crypto and Web3, and I'm curious what role or how much of a role you think crypto will play in fundraising going into 2024, and if you think Democrats or Republicans have more of an advantage.
No, I think the single biggest donor in the last cycle was Sam Bankman-Fried, who you all probably know well. Web3, in my view, is going to be a very fascinating political force to be reckoned with. Right now, they're concerned, obviously, largely with the regulation of crypto itself. But I think that you're going to see more people pushing into politics because now the interaction with DC is going to be one of the main drivers of whether enterprises are able to grow and operate successfully anywhere, but certainly whether they're going to be headquartered here in the U.S.
You also launched Lobby 3 earlier this year. I'm so curious, how many people have bought into the tokens and what positions is Lobby 3 going to be advocating for?
Yeah, Lobby 3 has been a great energized community of people that want to push for common sense regulation out of D.C. That is intelligent and sophisticated and doesn't try and throw different types of assets together, that has one regulator instead of kind of a hodgepodge. And it's been awesome getting to know people who want the best things for creators and entrepreneurs in the space. Anytime I go to a Web3 gathering, there's some folks who are part of the Lobby 3 community, and it's been a lot of fun.
As a former presidential candidate and the co-chair now of the Forward Party, I'd love to see into your crystal ball. Do you think a Biden-Trump face-off in 2024, is that inevitable?
It's the most likely matchup right now, Emily. The odds are that Trump declares at the end of this year after the midterms, and then Biden declares either Q1 or Q2 of next year. I will say that those two candidates will have a combined age of 159 in 2024, and 58% of Americans are not excited about either of them. So the question is whether a unity ticket or some independent effort arises, and a group called No Labels has very publicly invested $53 million in ballot access for a potential unity ticket. I think there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm for some alternative after people face the reality that it is a rematch in 2024 between Trump and Biden.
So let's say Biden doesn't run. Do you think the Democrats have a strong enough bench? Who's on that bench? Would you consider running again?
Well, I think Joe Biden likely declares because he feels he's the only one who can defeat Donald Trump, because he did it once. And you can't argue with the fact that he did defeat Trump once. But it's also tough to slot in another Democrat who you have the same confidence in necessarily, if you're Joe or even if you're anyone, because right now it's unclear who the Democratic nominee would be. I think that's one reason why Joe's going to run again, honestly.
So how are you going to spend the next couple of years if you're not running again? You know, where are we going to see you place your energy and efforts and priorities given a, you know, very critical election coming up?
So the Forward Party has endorsed a number of candidates around the country, including a U.S. Senate candidate named Evan McMullen, whom I'm going out to campaign in Utah for this weekend. We think we need to change the underlying incentives for our lawmakers and leaders by doing away with closed party primaries and replacing them with primaries where anyone can vote for anyone through something called ranked choice voting. If there's one thing you remember from this interview out there, if you're, you know, generally not that into politics, ranked choice voting is the way out of this mess. It's a way that anyone can vote for anyone with no spoiler effect, and it rewards more moderate, reasonable, collaborative candidates who actually come through for 51% of voters. So I'm going to be trying to make ranked choice voting the law in as many places as possible. And I'm happy to say it's spreading around the country.
All right. Andrew Yang, always great to have you with us. Entrepreneur, obviously a former presidential candidate, co-chair of the Forward Party. Thank you, Andrew, for stopping by. Coming up, the latest salvo comes from Grayscale versus the SEC. Grayscale CEO joining us next to talk about the case for a Bitcoin ETF. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice, or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing. The passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop. Customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Crypto asset manager Grayscale Investment says there is no justification for the SEC's rejection of a Bitcoin ETF earlier this year. The firm saying the SEC's rationale raises more questions than answers and will undermine trust in crypto. Here to explain is Grayscale CEO Michael Sonnenschein. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. So give us the latest. Where does the lawsuit with the SEC stand at this moment?
Well, last night, Emily, we filed our opening brief for the lawsuit. So this lays out our initial legal arguments to the court and is really the first substantive document as part of the litigation process. So it's important to remember this is a case about Bitcoin, but we're putting in front of our, you know, in front of the court system, really straightforward common sense arguments. I think one of the new arguments that's laid out here has to do with this idea of a significant market test, which the SEC has applied to Bitcoin ETF applications. They've applied this very stringently to spot Bitcoin ETF applications like Grayscale and other spot Bitcoin ETFs that have been denied, but very leniently to Bitcoin futures ETF applications, which is why we have several of them in the market. And there's really been no justification as to why this test is the, in fact, only test that the SEC should be using. And we've also never seen them use a test like this before when it comes to evaluating new products to bring to market.
Have you spoken at all with Gary Gensler directly?
You know, we have regular dialogue with really everyone in D.C. My legal team and myself are down in D.C. almost weekly these days. So we speak with all different parts of the SEC and other regulators.
Now, look, recently there have been a ton of cases, fraud and bankruptcy in crypto. There's Terra, there's Celsius, there's 3 Hours. Why is now the right time to prove to the SEC that this market is no worse in terms of market manipulation than others?
Well, that's exactly the point. This significant market test that the SEC has laid out, they believe protects investors from fraud and manipulation, and they got comfortable with that when it comes to Bitcoin futures. Well, the interesting thing and the flaw in that logic is that Bitcoin futures derive their pricing from the underlying spot Bitcoin market, which underpins GBTC and any other spot Bitcoin ETF application that's become, you know, in front of the SEC and ultimately been rejected or denied. I think what we're seeing, though, in DC is probably the most engagement and understanding we've ever seen around crypto. You have bipartisan support now with a variety of bills passing across the floor of Congress. And I think we and other industry, you know, heavyweights are calling on our regulators, calling on our legislators to really develop new frameworks, because otherwise we're squandering innovation here in the United States.
The Winklevoss brothers were the first to try this spot Bitcoin ETF. It didn't fail. The road is littered with carcasses of others who've tried and failed. How is Grayscale, with its huge scale, in your view, different?
It's a great question, Emily. So today, Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, ticker GBTC, is the largest Bitcoin fund in the world. It owns over 3% of all Bitcoin outstanding. A recent count said that there are more than 850,000 investors who own shares of GBTC in the U.S. alone, and that represents all 50 states. So when we, as an asset manager, are taking a product that's been in the market, has billions of dollars of assets, hundreds of millions of dollars of daily trading volume, has voluntarily become an SEC reporting company, and we know that the right thing for investors to protect them, to put additional disclosures and surveillance in place by becoming an ETF is the right thing for them, but our regulator is really shunning the opportunity to do so. Well, we certainly take issue with that. And so our team has been putting the entire resources of the firm behind this ETF initiative, and we're as committed as we've ever been to it.
timeline do you see for a resolution of this case?
Well, we filed the lawsuit earlier this summer, and at that time, we were guided to believe it could be anywhere from 9 to 12 months, although it could be longer, could be shorter. What you're going to see now that Grayscale has filed its opening brief is over the coming weeks, you'll see a variety of amicus briefs. So these are other parties that are filing briefs with the court to put in front of the judges presiding over the case to really talk about their points of view on the issues at hand. And then ultimately, you'll see a brief from the SEC a couple of weeks later with their responses to the arguments that our legal team has outlined.
We're also, you know, in the middle of what could be a really massive economic downturn. We just heard from Andrew Yang, who said he thinks we've got a lot further downward to go. What is your outlook and what it means for crypto?
We're certainly in a crypto winter, and a crypto winter is characterized now by sustained lower prices. We're seeing from the investment community, though, that the lower prices are not causing them to shy away from the asset class. In fact, we're actually seeing investors continue to diversify. So a lot of investors now kind of have that core position in Bitcoin, core position in Ethereum, or both, and they're now looking at other opportunities. And one of them is actually infrastructure. Just last week, our team launched a totally new offering, Grayscale Digital Infrastructure Opportunities LLC, which is an operating company that investors can put capital to work in that's actually buying Bitcoin mining hardware, plugging it into the network, and distributing that value back out to shareholders. So for a lot of investors, they've had that token exposure now, and now it's time that they think about the underlying infrastructure that secures the network. And so there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of activity going on despite the sustained lower pricing environment we find ourselves in.
Speaking of the underlying infrastructure, the Ethereum merge ended up being kind of a non-event. What do you think the next big event is going to be, you know, that will, you know, catalyze changes in potentially blockchain technology?
You know, Emily, respectfully, as someone who's been in crypto for 9 years, it actually was a big event because this was a question mark hanging over Ethereum for a long time. Could we see a very well-known, very well-trafficked, very well-utilized digital asset protocol move and make such a meaningful move from proof of work to proof of stake? And Ethereum did it. Now, I think as we're seeing the outcome of that, it's very, very early days, and we're starting to see the development of more and more staking around Ethereum and other assets. What's coming next is other upgrades to the Ethereum network, things like the ability to unstake assets that are put into the network for staking, and other upgrades that will come down the line. But I certainly think it's an accomplishment for all the developers and everyone who really put a lot of time and many, many years of planning and energy into getting Ethereum to make this switch over.
All right, point taken. Michael Sonnenschein, Grayscale CEO. We're going to continue to follow your challenge to the SEC. Appreciate you stopping by. Apple is withholding its latest employee benefits from staff at its only unionized retail store. The reason given, the store needs to negotiate the perks with Apple via their collective bargaining arrangement. But excluding unionized stores from new benefits, not a new trend. Starbucks also rolled out a series of new perks at non-union stores, including raises and student debt coaching, while saying that it can't legally provide them unilaterally to sites with union activity. SpaceX plans to announce two new space tourists slated to fly on the Starship rocket. Dennis Tito, the world's first ever space tourist in 2001, and his wife, the couple paid an undisclosed amount to fly around the moon on Starship once the vehicle is complete. They will travel with 10 other undisclosed passengers on a roughly week-long journey. The trip doesn't include a landing on the lunar surface, and it's unclear if the other passengers have been chosen yet. And that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. On Thursday, we've got Tron's Justin Sun on to talk about the future of DAOs and all things crypto and Web3. And don't forget to check out our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.